This is John Fisher for the Ultimate Practice Builder for New York Injury Lawyers. Today we have a fantastic guest, which is Sean Doolin. Sean is a partner of the law firm of Doolin and Platt based in Windham, New York, as well as Dobbs Ferry. Sean is the leading attorney in nursing home negligence in the state of New York, and we are very happy to have him on tonight to explain the Assisted Living Reform Act of 2004 applied to assisting living residences. And Sean, first of all, thank you for being on the call. I'd like if you could start out our audience with a description of what an assisted living residence is and how it compares to a nursing home.
Well, John, thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction. John, there are significant differences between an assisted living residence and a nursing home. And the primary difference is a nursing home provides 24-hour a day nursing care, whereas assisted living residences typically just assist the residents with their activities of daily living, such as dressing, sometimes eating, even assistance in providing medications. But they typically don't provide medical treatments or the level of supervision that is necessary in a nursing home. And historically, they also didn't have dementia units. Now, that has changed as a result of some more recent legislation, which I believe we're here to talk about. And I'll get into that in a moment. But I think the primary difference comes down to the level of nursing care provided, John.
Okay, Sean, can you tell our audience exactly what types of individuals would be eligible for an assisted living facility compared to a nursing home?
Somebody with mild dementia, somewhat forgetful, but can live somewhat independently and can remain in their own apartment, for example, their own room with a closed door safely. Somebody who may need help doing their laundry, may need help eating, may need help getting to a dining room, maybe need some assistance walking, but they're not bed-bound, they're not chair-bound. If you're bed-bound or chair-bound, you should be in a nursing home. And if you are profoundly demented, where you don't know who you are, where you are, and you are a threat to yourself or potentially others, you again need a higher level of supervision, and you couldn't be left alone, you know, at night, for example. Now that we're talking, traditionally speaking, that's been the case. Now under this recent legislation, that has changed. That dynamic is changing considerably. Whereas assisted living residences now are in a position to perform many of the functions of nursing homes.
Okay, let's talk about that. Sean, let's talk about the new statute. You reference it as the Reform Act for Assisted Living Residences of 2004, and that's a New York State statute, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that was signed by Governor Patak.
Now, this law that was enacted in 2004 set up a three-tier system for assisted living residences. Can you explain to our audience what that means?
Yes. It can be a bit confusing, but what New York did was, first in passing the Assisted Living Reform Act, created a licensing scheme where you could be licensed as an assisted living residence. And that would allow you to admit and retain those that are in need of, you know, basic assistance with activities of daily living, some of which we've talked about. But what's really kind of neat about the statute, John, is that now if a facility obtains one of two certificates, either a special needs certificate, which would allow a facility to maintain residents, for example, that have dementia, and where that dementia progresses, when that dementia progresses to the point where they would normally have been transferred from assisted living to a nursing home, now they can age in place and remain in the facility if they have this certificate, which allows them to essentially run a more traditional dementia unit. The other certificate that a facility can apply, that an assisted living residence can apply for under ALRA, is an enhanced assisted living certificate. This will allow a facility, an assisted living residence, to provide essentially 24-hour-a-day nursing care, which was something that was prohibited prior to the passing of ALRA. So now, if a resident is essentially bed-bound or chair-bound and needs nursing, actual nursing care, if certain criteria, and the criteria are very, very involved and very stringent, but if they're met, they can retain that resident in the assisted living residence as their disease progresses to the point where they would normally have been transferred to a nursing home. So they can, the idea behind ALRA was so that residents could age in place, and they wouldn't phase out of an assisted living residence. They could remain there and stay in that facility.
Okay, and the three different tiers that are in the category would be the assisted living residence, the enhanced assisted living residence, and the special needs assisted living residence. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, that is correct.
And the facility would require a license and certification for each different type of residence?
They would have to get licensed. This is where it gets complicated. They would have to first get licensed as an assisted living residence. Now, to be licensed as an assisted living residence, you first have to be either licensed as an adult home or enhanced living. Enhanced living was what existed prior to the Assisted Living Reform Act for the elderly, those that are 65 or older. Adult homes were for the younger population. You have to have one of those licenses before you can even apply to be an assisted living resident. So you have to abide by the statutory and regulatory scheme for adult homes or enhanced living. And then once you're licensed as an assisted living resident, you can apply for these certificates that we talked about, the special needs and enhanced assisted living certificates.
Sean, when a facility is certified as either an enhanced assisted living residence or special needs assisted living residence, what type of services are available to the residents there that would be different from those that can be provided in a standard nursing home?
Well, very little, John. Essentially, if a doctor signs off on it and the restringent requirements are met, which have to do with care planning and bringing in the appropriate nursing staff, et cetera, they can provide essentially all of the services of a nursing home if the right circumstances are met. Now, we're almost a decade into this since the passage of the statute, and I don't know that there are that many facilities that are in a position to do this. But let's say, for example, you have somebody who comes in and they have MS, and over time, when they first come in, they can walk with assistance, but then over time, they become bedbound, chair-bound, they can no longer walk, etc. They can stay there if let's say they bring in a home health care agency to meet all the needs of that resident. A situation where they wouldn't be able to remain is somebody who's dependent on a ventilator would be a good example. They're going to need 24-hour specialized nursing care. You're not going to see them in an enhanced assisted living residence.
What type of services would the residents in the assisted living facility have that are mandatory as compared to those available or required in a nursing home?
You want me to compare and contrast what would be available as far as care?
Sure. For example, with a nursing home, you'd have a medical doctor who's a medical director of the facility. He might not be there at all times, but he's at least available for consultations if necessary. You'd have registered nurses, at least usually one per unit. What about an assisted living residence? Do they have these same requirements, and do they also have different staffing ratios between the residents and the nurses?
Well, they don't have the same staffing requirements, and in fact, there was some recent legislation proposed to require that assisted living residences have at least a registered nurse on staff at all times, or at least during certain shifts, and that was challenged successfully. So that is not a requirement. And one of the points they made is that the industry made the, was that how can we compete with nursing homes if we're essentially going to become nursing homes? And you're going to require us to have a registered nurse on staff. So that's not required. Not required that they have a physician on staff. So those are significant differences if you were to have a loved one in one of these facilities and you wanted that type of level of care, available. There are also differences in how care is delivered in a nursing home versus an assisted living facility. And if you want, we can talk about that.
Well, let's talk about that, Sean. The standard language for a resident of a nursing home would be have an individualized care plan that lays out all their needs and the interventions to address those needs. What is the type of document that's similar to a care plan that would be used in assisted living residence?
It's called an individualized service plan, and it's developed within 30 days of admission. It has to be in place, and it acts as a care plan. It's done. It is interdisciplinary in the sense that you'll have the physician has to be involved. If there's a home health care agency, they have to be involved. The family's involved. And they developed this individualized service plan that has to be updated and revised at a minimum of every 6 months. But this is a very significant point I'm about to make, but also whenever there's a change in the resident's condition. That is new. In the past, I would see that adult homes often would, they were not updating the care plans as the resident's needs changed, and now it's a requirement, and that means they have to in some way be monitoring the resident, and either that's through a home health care agency that's on site, or through nursing care that's being provided because the family's paying for it, through a case manager that the facility provides. But that monitoring is very, very important because as the disease progresses, they need someone there keeping an eye out and updating that individualized service plan.
Now, let's address a situation that you have a fall or perhaps pressure sores or a medication error or something of that nature. What type of documents would the attorney assisting the client in that situation want to look at to determine if there's a case?
Well, I would start with a pre-admission evaluation. That has to be done within 30 days of the actual admission. You need a physician to review that and sign off on it and say that this resident is appropriate for the facility. So if you have somebody, let's say, who's at severely demented, they're at high risk for falls, they need a high level of supervision, then you want to look very carefully to see whether they should have been admitted in the first place. You want to look at that pre-admission evaluation. You want to look at the residency agreement, which specifies the services that are going to be provided. And, of course, you want to look at the individualized service plan that we discussed to see what their plan was in order to prevent falls for that particular resident.
Would you, in the typical assisted living residence, would you expect that there would be written policies and procedures that an attorney can look to for guidance as to whether the facility violated any of its own standards?
That's That's a great question. I am not seeing that they're developing these sort of policies and procedures. What you might see is that the facility has brought in a home health care agency, and the agency has developed policies and procedures. There are some requirements under the statute for the development of policies and procedures, depending on the license that you obtain. But I'm not getting them through discovery in the cases that I've been handling. I'm not seeing anything close to what you would find in a nursing home case, where it's highly regulated federally and on the state level, and they're required, specifically required, to have certain policies and procedures. We're not seeing that level of regulation, and we're not seeing the standard of care is providing for that.
That's all the time we have today, Sean. This is the conclusion of the first interview of a two-part interview entitled How to Litigate a Claim Against an Assisted Living Residence with Sean Doolin.